Hey there, loyal listeners. As you know, the Top Games podcast is made possible by Hardcore Gaming 101's Patreon supporters, who help keep this show alive by donating as little as $2 each month. If you were to join them in doing that, you would not only help keep the lights on at HG 101 Towers, you'd also get access to our super secret Patreon RSS feed, which is full of ad-free versions of this podcast with exclusive bonus game rankings. Here's a taste of what you've been missing. We got a real treat for you this time. We're going to be ranking Mortal Kombat.
You didn't know it was originally going to be like a licensed title based on Jean-Claude Van Damme's Bloodsport, right?
I did not know that. So it was Johnny Cage, literally, like, was going to be Jean-Claude Van Damme.
No, I think what I remember hearing is that they actually wanted to get Jean-Claude, but of course he felt that project was likely below him at the time.
Oh, it was. It's, funny thing is, like, the story of Mortal Kombat is more realistic than the actual story that Bloodsport is based on, which is totally fabricated.
Yeah, I mean, did Frank Dukes really beat Ogre at Karate Champ? You know, like, who knows? I don't think so.
Go to patreon.com/HG101 and pledge a couple bucks. That's patreon.com/HG101. Act now and be a hero.
Some, this is painfully obvious, but hardcore gaming means it ain't for the novices. The main source to brain train your knowledge and lay maintain with a course aimed at colleges. To HG101 we give the honor, thanks to Kirk, a lot of Xerxes to host it proper, as well as Satanga, Cal and Bobinator, Booker Hart and others discuss and discover all the 47,000 games, and when they rate them you can bet it's scientifically locked in position. Speaking of which, no system is obscure, and look, they wrote a book about it, go out and cop yours.
Hello and welcome to HardcoreGaming101.net's Top 47,858 Games of All Time podcast, where we objectively, definitively, and scientifically rank the games that you nominate. My name is Xerxes, and I'm the show's main host and producer, and on this podcast we have three rules. Rule 1, all rankings are final, official, and scientifically accurate. Rule 2, you can nominate one game at a time via 5-star review on iTunes or Stitcher. Those are the ones we try to get to first. You can also go to bit.ly/rankthisplease and add a game to the slush pile and cross your fingers. We make no guarantees on those. Rule number 3, you can nominate games that have already been nominated, just don't nominate games you've already ranked. See the master list for yourself. It's at bit.ly/47kgames. That's bit.ly/47kgames.
Don't be a smartass kid.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back. For this episode, we're going to be talking about very well-regarded, important, incredible, historic, etc. game, perhaps. We'll decide. Planescape Torment, which was nominated by Block Silent on iTunes. It was developed by Black Isle Studios and published by Interplay for the PC. Earliest release date and territory is in the United States, December 1999. I am an old man. Who's with me to discuss Planescape Torment?
I'm the Great Clay.
I'm Texelbam.
And I'm Word on the Wind.
Everybody sounds thrilled to talk about Planescape Torment. That's the sound of raw thrills.
That's the sound of raw torment.
Okay. Yeah, what on the wind torment?
So, Planescape Torment is a Dragons and Dungeons and Dragons. It's a Dungeons and Dragons related product, right?
No, yeah, it's based on the Planescape setting for Advanced Dungeons and Dragons 2nd Edition.
What is the Planescape setting? Can you explain that to me?
Planescape is based on the Great Wheel, which is the D&D. It's one of the D&D cosmologies. So D&D has its alignment system, and it does have a bunch of planes. It has the elemental planes. It does have various other planes, and all of these kind of circle around the material plane, which is not our world, but the equivalent to that. And they were kind of unified in this one setting. They did exist before, and various other worlds have access to it, but they usually didn't really focus on these planes as a setting. There were more existing in addition to whatever main setting you're currently playing. And there was another attempt at unifying a lot of settings. That was Spelljammer, that's D&D in space. But this one here focuses more on the previously discussed but not really designed as a setting planes we have.
Yeah, the short version is the D&D verse is a multiverse, and the Planescape setting is kind of like the hub of it all.
Yeah, so my interpretation of this has always been, because I don't read any of the manuals or any of the source material or any of the flavor text or anything, really. I read as little as possible because I'm playing games, damn it. And games are supposed to not be like.
Well, then this is not the right.
Yeah, this is absolutely not the game for you. Here, let me go find you a picture book. That sounds more your speed.
Yes.
You're one step away from playing a text adventure without reading, which.
Well, you know, a lot of the stages do resemble like a Where's Waldo book. So, I mean, it is like my understanding was always that you were dead and then but you weren't like dead. And this is like the world of the kind of dead. Is that
No, the nameless one, the character that you play as is an immortal who keeps coming back. He can't die is the crux of it. Everyone else, for the most part, is regular.
So, but there's like. But everybody's not dead in this world?
Well, other than the undead, yeah.
Yeah, there are a couple of planes where you end up if you die depending on your alignment, but that's not really the focus of the game. There's also other planes that are not full of formerly alive people, and even the planes for people who die on a different plane also have natives that didn't die and are just from that plane.
But yeah, everyone is basically a regular person in this. Like, the game is kind of confusing on this if you go in not knowing anything about the setting because, you know, you open up in a mortuary and there's these guys called the Dustmen who are basically a nihilist cult, more or less. And then they're just like, oh yeah, no one here is actually alive. And that's like the first stuff you hear, but they're just a cult and that's what they think.
Yeah, that's their belief system, right? Because they, like... I mean, this is, I guess, what the point of D&D settings is at this stage is like incredibly in-depth, like lore and stuff that most players will not, I don't think, latch onto. Like, I think this is a very playable game, in a sense, even like newcomers who, like me who aren't really like versed in the lore. Particularly ever since my player character dwarf was killed in the mines of whatever back in like 1989, I've never felt like going back.
Say that of the Black Isle Infinity Engine games, this is the most approachable because combat has the least presence here, and it's also more or less the most simplified. Unlike every other Black Isle D&D title, you don't make a character, you don't pick a class, you don't pick a background. The most you do is assign the nameless one's ability scores, and you're off. So right. The game is kind of structured around the nameless one not having anything in particular other than, oh, hey, you start with a flying skull for a friend, and you can kind of customize him at given points. And that's where I started to have problems with the game. Shockingly, it's not the Infinity Engine that makes me angry, and it's not the fact that it's old D&D, which, you know, I have reservations and concerns about. But in this case, it's such a non-factor to the game, it may as well not be there for the most part.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, but I think in a way, that's kind of the strength of the game. It's just like, if you play pen and paper... RPGs and have played a game with like a DM who's like very much like just kind of telling a story, and there's like smatterings of combat here and there, but mostly it's like solving little puzzles and learning about the world that's in the adventure module or whatever it is. That's what this feels like. I just want to say that the disembodied skullhead ghost friend is horny. Like horny as hell. He's that dude.
Apparently he's a fan favorite. I can't stand him.
Yeah, I don't find him that funny.
He's very popular.
The crack of dawn better be careful around that skull, because he is out for something.
Yeah,
he's always like, "Hey, you talk to that zombie girl? She's dead. I'm dead. We could make this happen."
Yeah, he doesn't stop at the undead ladies either.
Yeah, oh, that
he's kind of a creep, honestly.
Skullhead guy. Yeah, I mean, the thing is like, yeah, it's got this like Memento-esque quality, like the movie Memento, right? Like where there's like a backstory to the character. There's stuff you've been trying to do, and as you're playing the game, you're uncovering pieces of what that story was,
and like what your quest was, and you kind of are trying to figure out. And I didn't get much further in the game than the probably like the first like third of it this time. So I never do like any other D&D video game. About the first third of it's the best I can hope to complete.
I had a lot of frustration playing this, not for the Source gaming engine, not for the Infinity engine, but for the fact that, honestly, I don't think this game works well as a game as it's presented. It is so narratively structured that I feel binding it to trying to make it into an RPG on the Infinity engine using second edition rules basically does it a disservice, because that just opens up so many avenues for something to go wrong. It's like the narrative is the thing that everyone always goes on and celebrates about this game. And for the glimpses I caught of it, it was good. But I spent, no joke, half of the time playing this trying to change my class to mage, because the game is structured so that if your stats are of a given height, you'll get more dialogue options. If you want the best dialogue options, you have to have basically maximum wisdom at character creation, high int, high charisma, and that means that you're crap at an actual physical fight. So you want to go make yourself a mage, just so you can get all like the best like dialogue and story bits and prizes and everything else. I go to the person that allows you to change your class to a mage, and she's supposed to give you an item. I never got it. I don't know if maybe my inventory was full. It wasn't on the floor when I checked it. I couldn't actually proceed with that, and I sure as hell wasn't going to start over after I spent like 10 hours trying to get that solved and doing other side quests in the meantime.
Here's my question. Okay, so how long are you in the Hive? Because I don't think I've ever gotten out of the Hive.
Tax would have to answer that one. I didn't get out.
I couldn't tell you the number of hours, but I think that might not actually have been the first third of the game. But it really depends on how many side quests you do and how much time you spend just walking around talking to people. You can actually play this game in a fairly short amount of time if you kind of know what you're doing.
Oh, I do.
A little bit skipping through. So we should probably briefly talk about where this game comes from. So it's a game in the Infinity engine, and that also powers the Baldur's Gate games and the Icewind Dale games. And Baldur's Gate is more like a traditional Dungeons & Dragons adventure, whereas the Icewind Dale games go more into the direction of classic like 70s D&D dungeon crawl modules.
Yes, yeah.
There's less side quests, there's less dialogue. It's mostly just you go from one big dungeon, you kill everyone there, you get the items, then you go to the next one. And you also have a custom party as opposed to specific characters in the game. And this game here goes into the opposite direction. It has very specific characters. Even your main character isn't fully customized. You can customize aspects, but
right. It
will always be the nameless one. And Baldur's Gate's kind of in the middle. I think that's one of the reasons why this game is what it is. And it was mentioned that this might not have been the best system or engine to choose, but the reason why it's here is because it's based on Baldur's Gate in a certain sense. I don't think they would have built this game like this if this had been the first of these games, but it's essentially a spin-off. Engine-wise, that's why we got it like we did.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's so many things I need to say that's kind of hard for me to not derail myself, and I kind of ended up doing that. Like, what I was basically getting at was, in trying to play the game in a way that makes mechanical sense, I was just tripping over all of the other business that doesn't really facilitate the strengths of the game. And wholesale, I think this game would be better as a visual novel. You can even keep the RPG elements more or less the way they are, but just reduce it to, you know, menu options and more flavory text about various situations. I think it would be an improvement.
Yeah, I mean, it's got, like, yeah, adventure game-esque stuff to it, puzzles and things. I didn't get a feeling, like, a lot of times with these you know, very pen and paper inspired RPG video games, like these CRPGs, for lack of a better acronym. You feel like there's like more than one way to do things. Whereas in this game, there's like kinda is like you can kill everything or you can do it the right way, and that's about
it. It's like you can optimize your stats, you can actually do all the quests, or you can not.
But there's like, I do, like, although I joked about not reading any of the flavor text and skipping over all the dialogues, I really didn't. I actually enjoy, that's part of the reason why I think it always takes me so long to play the game, where it's like, there's always some part of my life that gets in the way and then I never finish it, is because it is like, you kind of do want to talk to everybody and just see everything. I really do enjoy the setting, although it's like, it does feel very like grimdark, like 90s. Crap world fantasy type thing, but it's compelling. Like, there's something to it.
I think that's just because they stick you in the hive, which is basically the ass end of Sigil.
Yeah, it's like the across the wrong side of the tracks of this,
basically. Yeah.
You can go there directly from the mortuary, right?
Yeah,
like, but you don't
like that's to. Where it, that's where it's centered.
Yeah, so like, I don't think I've ever made it out of the hive, or if I have, it was like only in a side quest or something. But you can walk around the town too, like the regular part of the town. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting is you were talking about like the dustmen, right? So like, you start up, you wake up, and you're basically like, you're supposed to be dead, but you're not. And you wake up in this like place where they prepare bodies to be whatevered. And like, they cremate some of them, others get turned into zombie slaves, and it's the dustmen who do this. And I killed a lot of those guys, I'll be honest. And but like, the thing is like, you the whole, it's kind of cool in a way, because when you start out, like, the game doesn't tell you much about, you're just as clueless as your character's supposed to be. And it's kind of like, I don't know what's going on. Like, what do I do? Like, do I talk to this person? What do I do? And you can, you feel like you're kind of, you really do feel like you're recovering your memory in a way. It's very film noir type story, but in D&D.
Yeah, recovering world. Memory is actually a game mechanic, and some of it is predicated on having a minimum amount of wisdom to do so.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of crappy, because like, in a Fallout game, for example, like, there is dialogue options you only get if you're really super smart, but you can still play through the game and get the entire story if you're a imbecile, right?
Yeah, like, that's kind of like, as far as the game itself, outside of, you know, the structures within it is bound, that's my biggest critique of the game itself, is that there are so many things gated by specific statistical scores, and some of them are, and like, the ones at the outset of the game are still really high. Like, there's plenty of things out there that want like 16 whiz or 16 int or 16 cha. And it's just like, I'm not even level 5 yet. You are asking for extremely specific builds, while at the same time you go a couple dialogue options further and they want other really high scores to contend with to actually navigate the whole thing correctly. You know, I've been playing Shadowrun Dragonfall, which has, you know, a very similar structure, where it's just like, okay, if you have, you know, a given stat or subskill up to, you know, this high, you can do this dialogue choice. And it tells you that, you know, okay, if you have this, then that's what you'd have. If you had this, you'd be able to say this, but you don't, so you can't. And, you know, that's like a refinement of the kind of system that this was kind of in the realm of laying the groundwork for. Unfortunately, it's like, while you would call it an influential, I don't think it's really executed in a particularly gratifying manner.
It is kind of a clumsy way of dealing with that. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think part of the reason for that is that, just in case you're not familiar with D&D as a listener, you generally roll your stats at the beginning when you create your character, and they mostly stay the same. You can increase them. It depends on the edition. There are items that do increase them temporarily or permanently, but for the most part, this is where you add. So this is not a game where you just put a couple of points into various stats, and then every time you level up, you put more points into it. So if you start with, let's say, 10 wisdom, you're probably going to get stuck with fairly low wisdom. You're not going to reach 18 anytime soon. And I think that is a bit of a trap. And if you're not familiar with the D&D system, then you might not really be aware of that. Because even if you read the manual and if you check out the tooltips for your stats, they don't necessarily tell you what you want to have. Because they might tell you, oh, if you want to be a wizard, choose high intelligence. That is okay, but they don't necessarily give you more hints than that. And I think they could have fixed that by just giving you different options for whatever high stat you have. Maybe recommending, oh, at least have one stat at 16, and then whatever stat you have just gives you different encounters. So you don't really end up in a situation where instead of you just have, let's say, oh, you get all the strengths dialogue because you're really bulky instead of the witty dialogue because you're smart. Instead, you end up in a situation where you just, you don't have any dialogue here, or at least nothing interesting.
Yeah, the thing is, like, in a traditional, like, I don't know how D&D would work in this scenario, but like in the pen and paper games I'm familiar with, like in that kind of situation is like, you could, what would happen is the player would say, I'm going to try and do this. Like, I'm going to try and like convince this person I'm somebody else. And then you've got to roll for it, right?
Yeah.
And there's a chance. Yeah. There's a chance that you could get it to work. Whereas in games like this, or even Baldur's Gate, you know, or anything really, it's like, no, you're not smart enough to make it work. Don't even try. And I kind of hate that. Like, I do understand why that's frustrating, because it's like, you should give the player a chance. Like, give them, like, you know, have the game roll for it in a sense, where you've got a chance of, like, making this
work. Yeah, I think this is the situation where the game master might look at your character sheet and looks, oh, you've got high strength. You intimidate the person because you look so big and scary. Or you're very smart, so you make a good argument and convince them. Or you're very charismatic, so you seduce them. I guess you could have that in the game, but it doesn't work for every creature you meet, and they didn't quite do that for every single bit of dialogue. So I can kind of see where, because this game is so story heavy as opposed to being more combat heavy. So the combat is more a very rigorous mechanical thing to resolve. You step someone, you make a roll. There isn't really much the game master decides in that situation, whereas the dialogue is all in their hand. And I think it's still a very fun system to approach, but to be honest, it might have been more fun for me because Dungeon Dragon 2nd Edition is the edition that I played first, and at the time I played the game I was fairly familiar with it, so for me I could just jump right in into a territory that I was familiar with, which is not the case if you just played the video games before, or might not have played maybe not even any tabletop RPGs at all.
Yeah, Clay, do you got anything to add to this? You've been kind of quiet, and I don't want you to feel like you're being crowded out.
No, not really. Everything's been being covered.
You're just here to make sure everything is on the level.
Oh,
Clay will speak up when we make a horrible mistake, but yeah.
Clay is watching, and judgment will be cast.
Yeah. You know, I wonder if, like, at the time I was first playing this game, I was reading a series of terrible trash science fiction novels in a series called, I think, Heroes in Hell or something like that. And it was all about famous historical people who die and go to hell, and they have to, like, live in the same world. And there's, like, wars going on between, like, Julius Caesar and, like, Jim Morrison or something. I don't know. And but there's, like, it's, like, the way that people, like, start out when they die is, like, you start in, like, I think it's called the mortuary, and you're essentially, your corpse is put back together. And that must be why I was confusing it, because I was getting it confused with that. It really is apropos to nothing, but remembering some old 90s lore there. What else do we want to say about it? Like, what does this game really do well? What are its strengths? What kind of person would want to play Planescape Torment after all these years?
As I've said, like, the strong point is the narrative and the writing and the role-playing. Like, this is an early example of a Western RPG where role-playing is at the forefront of the affair rather than combat, which is where, you know, that's where the gold box is, that's where Baldur's Gate is, that's very much where Icewind Dale is. This one goes the other way and tries to make it a far more cerebral affair, as opposed to a more, you know, face punch, you know, tactical at best affair. And so it's like, if you're interested in checking out some kind of an interesting story, and you're willing to put up with the fact that, you know, this is put forward in a platform that doesn't really facilitate what it's trying to do really well, then, you know, you can stick with it. I will say, there are many community-made mods to make the engine more accessible. This game was released before Baldur's Gate 2 was released, and Baldur's Gate 2 is where, like, all of the Infinity Engine problems got, like, solved. I was mentioning earlier about how I couldn't do, like, the magic quest. Well, a button was added in Baldur's Gate 2 where if you hold it down, every single actor and item on the screen gets highlighted, so you know where everything is.
Isn't that
that's not natively in this game?
Baldur's Gate?
Gate 1. They put that in an enhanced, but not
the original. Yeah, that's the thing. I think if anybody plays any of these games now, they're going to be playing the enhanced edition.
Hold on, though. Tax, confirm that for me, because I swear I do that every time when I'm looking for that damn ring in Baldur's Gate 1.
What you probably did is, and that was the right decision, is play the Baldur's Gate 2 mod, which transfers all of Baldur's Gate 1 to the Baldur's Gate 2 engine.
Well,
so it's still the same game, 100%
the same. Because I was doing it in 97, so...
That is an old mod, but, well, that would be before Baldur's Gate 2. I'm pretty sure the highlight button is not in Baldur's Gate 1, because that ring is pretty much impossible to find without yeah, actually knowing where it is or randomly going across a pixel, because that's like a 2x2 pixel spot you have to find. But it's one ridiculous. Of the game's most useful items, so it's pretty much like a reward for someone who likes intense pixel hunting.
But yeah, like the highlight function did not exist yet. And it's like I mentioned that this one was made much more accessible than previous efforts. There's a run button in this. You know, your characters can actually run. So you're not, you know, waiting, you know, 2 minutes for everyone to cross a map. You don't get blocked with you must gather your party before venturing forth. You only need one person to reach the end of the map. It can even be the skull. That's sufficient. Everyone teleports.
Hey, horny that's skull, fine. Do this for me.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like they made improvements to this, and the sprite work is definitely a step above, you know, the efforts that they put in Baldur's Gate. Like this is an improvement on the engine. You know, it's just I don't feel it's enough to facilitate what they were trying to do at the time that they did it. So there's many community-made mods that, you know, backport the functionality of the later things, and they put it into the Planescape game that'll make it far less of a migraine to play. I highly recommend if you're going to do it that way.
Is the Enhanced Edition, does it include a lot of these improvements?
So that's a bit of a controversy that's been kicking around since the Enhanced Edition came out. By everyone who has played it, that it, like at least at the time that it launched, that I was reading their views of, it's basically just the core game with all the mods prepackaged, and Beamdog did not actually do anything to enhance the game other than prepackage a bunch of mods.
But is that good? Because that's how most people are going to play it now, I think.
You can just get the regular Planescape game and slap in the mods for free. They're not that difficult to find.
I mean, but. When you buy the game, like, I don't think most people are going to pay the full price for the game. They're going to wait till it's on sale on GOG and then get it for like $3 or something. And it comes in the Enhanced Edition comes with, I think, the original version too. Yeah, sooner or later, they're going to return. Like, this series of games, or like the broader series, especially Baldur's Gate, is too popular not to be returned to eventually. And I have a feeling Planescape is going to make a return as well.
It did! They tried, but they couldn't get the licensing from Wizards, so they went with a newer RPG made by the same guys who did 2E called Numenera Torment.
I thought it was Torment Numenera.
I don't care. So, either one. That's one good. I didn't know that, actually, but, yeah, no, I mean, I feel like it's one of those, it's well-regarded enough that I feel like it's going to get returned to sooner or later in like a modern sense.
Yeah, I think if you were actually going to hope for an enhanced edition of this where it's like, oh, hey, the thing runs well and it looks nicer and it plays nicer and a lot of the problems are solved, I think you'd be better off handing it over to Lizard Cube.
Yeah, I just feel like, anyway, so we got to rank this thing. Is there anything else we should mention about Planescape Torment? Because I feel like we've been kind of like, a little bit down on it, and that's probably because it gets talked up a lot. And it's partly my fault for introducing the game the way I did, because I'm an idiot.
It's not really that. Like, I've been playing this, you know, over the course of the week, and I've just been miserable the whole time. Like, I've been looking for excuses to do other things.
Really? Because I had other things to do, and I found myself wanting to play more Planescape Torment. And I don't know why that is. I don't even like the setting really that much. It's kind of like, it seems kind of dorky to me, but I do love I love the stuff you can do. Like when you're just talking to people, like for example, like early in the game, if you, exit the mortuary, the regular way through the door and not through like some kind of, you know, Doctor Strange sparkly portal thing, you kind of go out into a regular town. You can go into the bar where like the dustmen hang out when they're off work, and there's like a dustman in the corner is like having an existential crisis, and it's like nothing I do has meaning. I don't think this is all a bunch of, like, I'm supposed to believe in this stuff, but it's all nonsense. I mean, we're all really not, you know, it's like,
yeah, I ran into her and that was an interesting thing. You can actually join the dustman faction and like dealing with her and others are, you know, a series of quests that you can do.
Yeah, I talked this person into, like, rethinking their lives and returning to work with like a renewed sense of purpose, which felt kind of funny and fun. And that's exactly the kind of stupid thing that these kinds of games exist to let you do. It's just like,
yeah.
There's so much of it. And there's so much content in the game too. And if you play it just once, I don't think you're going to see most of it. You know, and sometimes that'll be because you don't have the right stats, but
yeah,
other times
it'll
just be because you didn't go there and you didn't talk to that person. And if you're like me and you live for side quests and stupid stuff that has nothing to do with the main story, you will probably really like it because there's a lot to discover. There's a lot of people to talk to and things to do, and it is very well written. Like it's definitely got that tongue in cheek, like Game Master style humor, but it works. Where do we want to rank this thing?
So the beauty of Infinity Engine games.
You were saying, like, you know, it's like if you're someone who, like, just does all the side quests and then ignores the hell out of, you know, like the main plot until, like, you don't have a choice. You have to do it to get more side quests. Like, that's how I play everything. Like, this should absolutely be my thing, but it isn't.
But I mean, I think you did a pretty good job of explaining why that is.
Right.
I'm more thinking, like, where does this game belong in history? Like, if people are going to play Planescape Torment, like, how far up or down the list should it be? Like, is it...
I think between the fact that, like, as a narrative, it is really good, and, like, as an immersive experience, you know, if you're not getting stymied by the play method, you're probably going to enjoy this a lot. But the combat is there at best, and just... a nuisance otherwise. I don't see myself returning to this at all ever. I can't be bothered is what it amounts to. And I'm thinking somewhere if not adjacent within 10 of Metal Saga, which is down at 209, which is, you know, a game that is very open to what you want to do with it. You know, it's also an RPG where you get to make all kinds of decisions and whatnot. But, you know, that game has entertaining combat. You can end it whenever you like. You can end it before you even start the game and get credits.
That's
it's great.
I mean, what if you think of this not as an RPG or a CRPG or whatever you want to call it, but as like an adventure game?
With, is what it should be.
Yeah, as an adventure game, like a point-and-click adventure with some RPG combat elements to it.
I think this should go into the top 100.
Why is that?
Because I think it's somewhat unique. I mean, we have pointed out all those weak spots that are somewhat artifacts from Baldur's Gate 2, but I think this game here strikes a nice spot between RPG exploration, but still being somewhat narrative heavy, which a lot of adventure games do not have. They might have like inventory puzzles and stuff, but at the same time, there's also a lot of RPGs that still mainly focus on combat and character building. Mm. And I think this game kind of hit the spot in between. That is not a hit all that common, especially not with, as Word pointed out, Western RPGs. And I think it's also a very interesting adaptation of Dungeons & Dragons in that regard, most of which are firmly in the former camp of being rather combat-heavy overall.
Yeah, I gotta say, I like the story of this a lot better than Baldur's Gate.
Not hard.
And it's not like Baldur's Gate's story is bad, it's just like, I don't care about this person.
Yeah, but Baldur's Gate has a problem that you start the game and then you start doing side quests and like half an hour later you don't even remember who you are, what you're doing, but you're really busy stabbing people and improving your stats, so it doesn't really matter.
You are the son of the god of war and chaos, and you rescued the following kittens, and you did the, yeah, it's like, it does feel really weird.
Follow the main story quests, go to this inn and talk to these people. By the way, there's a wizard that will cast magic missile, yeah, and it'll kill you, guaranteed.
Here they fix that by just giving your main character amnesia, so you don't really have to remember anything because your character doesn't either.
If you look at it as like, it's kind of like the grimdark version of Grim Fandango. Way.
I hadn't thought about it like that, yeah.
Yeah, it is very... yeah, okay, so you would put it in the top 100. Word would put it in around like a little bit below 200, I think. And Clade, what do you think?
That's a tough one. You know, I think somewhere I might actually cut the difference and go something like 120, 110. So it's not better than
not
Outlaws.
Quite in the middle, but a little bit closer to the top of the middle.
Yeah,
in between those two. I mean, not in the middle.
Yeah, it's a neat game. Infinity Engine, I love second edition D&D. I have some weird issues with Infinity Engine compared to... I mean, it's hard for me to say I hate Infinity Engine when I play Wizardry for a hobby, but... It's like, man, it's too slow.
Yeah, you've got
wireframe.
Yeah, you've got problems aplenty right there. Although I love Wizardry too.
I love Wizardry 4.
I got to put it a little bit lower than that. It really frustrates me to see stuff like Rayman 2 and Crash Bandicoot 2 and other turds up that high. But whoa. I got to ignore that and say, like, you know, it's. I do want to encourage people to play this game, because if this is your jam, like, you will thank us and donate gratuitously to the Patreon.
Well, it's
because you're so grateful for what we did. But yeah, it's really worth
better or worse than loom
trying. You know, don't pay like $20 for it, but pay like $5 for it. It's pretty good. What if we put it around?
Loom is a fantasy point and click, and this is fantasy point and click.
I like it better than any King's Quest game. It holds up. You know what I mean?
It's better than any King's Quest game.
I'm going to disagree on you there. 6 is really good.
Nope, you're wrong. So,
okay. Science has spoken.
All right, yeah.
Okay, I actually think this is better than Ultima 7, The Black Gate.
But I like Ultima 7 a lot, but I kind of agree with you. I feel like Ultima 7 has like a barrier to entry that this game, oddly enough,
I am really
doesn't have.
Biased. I cannot say this game has a barrier to entry because I am literally staring at a bookshelf of D&D books right now.
Yeah,
so,
you're right.
Yeah,
it's really hard.
Which could turn into a barrier to entry to your room because they're just that heavy.
Yeah.
Kinda
it repels it. Sexual partners. Sorry, I didn't mean... If you saw my bookshelves, you would not be impressed or aroused. Okay, so, Clay, like... Compared to like the pen and paper campaigns you've played in or something, like, this would be pretty good, right? Like, that's how I feel about it.
Yeah, it's maybe, well, it's like you were saying, like, if you're playing in a pen and paper game, you have the ability to say, I want to do this or say this. And literally, a computer game can't do that.
No.
And it's, I mean, like you said, this game's got a lot of sweet side quest kind of stuff. And
right.
It's closer than a lot of games get. At times, I mean,
I feel like
when you're talking like 8 CDs or whatever,
it's the equivalent of having a really talented storytelling kind of game master who really doesn't like doing the combat stuff because they're lazy.
I've
and sometimes that's not
that.
So bad.
Hey, quit calling me out, asshole.
Yeah, I'm calling myself out here too. So like, it's just, but if you got like, well, I'm not actually that talented of a storyteller, but like that, this is what you dream of, like somebody who can really weave this kind of world together, and you almost never get that, I think.
No.
I feel like a lot of problems with the game would be solved if they provided more alternative methods to puzzles.
Yeah.
Or if they lowered a lot of the barriers to entry. Like, when I was poking about with Tyranny last year, like, right at the beginning of the game, they present you with a situation where it's like, okay, you're good at athletics, you can charge this guy. You're good at, you know, more dexterous things, you know, you can slip behind him and take him out that way. Are you really good at social stuff? You can talk him down. It's like, they account for that kind of stuff in much later RPGs, and it's like,
but that's
if they had done
years.
That for this, I would be way more on board with it, but they don't. The barriers to entry are really high, and they don't even tell you what the barriers to entry are, so you don't even know exactly what it is you're looking for to improve on either as a replay, or just like, okay, let's load the quick save, come back a level or two later after I've gotten some more stats and see if that's enough.
How about I pitch this? How about this? We put it below. I want to put it below like a game like Illbleed, but I kind of want to put it above a game like Morrowind, which I say I put it below Final Fight, above Wonder Boy and Monster Land. Morrowind is at number 156 as of this recording.
Okay.
156. That is, wait, where's Final Fight?
Final Fight is 153. I'm talking about a very narrow range here.
Yeah,
that's like below Ape Escape. Or Sonic this goes not below Sonic Adventure.
Yeah, that's true. Sonic Adventure no. does deserve to be slapped
down. Does not
down
go below Sonic Adventure.
Yeah, as much as I don't enjoy this game, I am not at all going to cede it to Morrowind.
Oh, and there's Rayman 2 at 127. Let's put it below Loom above Rayman 2. How about that?
Where's Loom?
126.
This is the best I get. So that's below.
I can accept that.
That's three, and that's where it goes. Planescape Torment. We talked about it for 40-odd minutes, and you really should, if you hear us saying this and you're like, oh, God, I'm not going to play that ever. You're right. You shouldn't play it ever. But if you hear us saying this stuff and you're like, oh, this sounds like it could be my jam, it is your jam, and you should toast it, that bread, and spread Planescape Torment all over it. Because
there's eight discs worth of it, so there's what's plenty to spread.
It's so much, and there's stuff to do, there's stuff to see, there's weirdos
there's
to talk
so
to.
There's so much to read.
So much to read.
Good yeah. grief, like, I spent, like, 5 hours in the mortuary just reading shit.
I know, it's great.
It's lovely. Planescape
it really
Torment,
should be a visual novel.
That's where it goes. It should be a visual novel, but it ain't. And, yeah, check it out. Thanks, everybody, and we'll see you next episode.
That's all for this episode. Special thanks goes out to our lovely co-hosts and compatriots, our booking agent Jeff Rude, our theme song MC Norm, check him out at Normally Retro on Twitter, and our technical assistant, video editor, and scriptwriter Ed Burns. You can support this podcast by making a small monthly donation at patreon.com/HG101. I know I did. By subscribing to the HG101 YouTube channel, and by following at GC9X and at HG_101 on Twitter. You can also hang out with us at our Discord channel. It's at bit.ly/HG Discord. But most importantly, help us spread the love of games by getting on iTunes, subscribing to HG101, and giving us a 5-star review. Do it because you like us and you want us to succeed. Until next time, keep keeping it real.
That's the sound of raw thrills.